This week we're reading Parshat Vayetchanan. Parshat Vayetchanan always comes immediately after Tisha B'Av, which means that there are so many very big things that we always talk about. First of all, the Shiva Denachem to begin, Nachamu Nachamu Ami, issues of the identity of the author of the second half of Yeshayahu, that we talked about a few weeks ago in another context. Of course, Vayetchanan itself carries really the only theological programmatic presentation in all of Chumash, which is the remembrance of Mamad Har Sinai, and more critically than what happened, what you did not see, and as a backing for the prohibition against graven images. And it also includes the Kriya and Tisha B'Av that we just read a couple days ago, of the prophecy of going into exile and then Tshuva and being returned. And of course, the two most famous passages in Vayetchanan are Shema Yisrael and the Aseret HaDibrot. And the Aseret HaDibrot, as we talked about last year, 2 years ago, I don't know, sometime in the last millennium, really the sort of founding piece of all the Neumah Mitzvot. From the middle of Vayetchanan all the way until the beginning of Kitavo, which is almost all the Dvarim, Moshe presents the Mitzvot. But Moshe presents the Mitzvot in an order which Chazal have decided is a significant order. And that's why we said, for instance, "Afilu lemanda lo darish smuchim achol haTorah kula darish smuchim b'mishnah Torah." Even somebody who does not believe the juxtaposition and sequencing is significant in legal texts, in Shmot, for instance, does, or for Yehuda, does in Dvarim. The reason seems to be because Dvarim is not only an organized speech, but that the sequence of the mitzvot as presented is very deliberate. And the sequence of the mitzvot, I suggested a couple of years ago, really follows the Aseret HaDibrot and is sort of a fuller presentation of them. And so after the first the Aseret HaDibrot, we then get a lot more details about how we're supposed to relate to God, loving God, fearing God, etc. Then a whole long piece of Avodah Zarah, including the narrative about the Egel, and then in the beginning of Re'eh, the emphasis on the place where God chooses his name to rest, which is an expansion on Lo Tisa, and then the whole calendar expansion on Shabbat, etc. And then Shoftim, of course, which is all about the hierarchical authority structure in society of Kohanim and Shoftim and Malachim and Nevi'im, is an expansion of Kibbud Av V'Em, and we'll talk about the rest. So I want to go back actually to the basics of that. Now the other piece, of course, which is very famous in Vayetchanan, is Shema Yisrael, which leads to an interesting halachic point made in the Mishnah at the beginning of the second parak of Brachot. What happens if this week you're practicing your laning, and you get up early in the morning, and you're laning shishi, Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad, V'yahavta, etc. And then you turn around, and you know you get busy, and you miss Zman Kriyat Shema, where you say Kriyat Shema. That's something kiven libo for what? Did you have to mechavim for the mitzvah, or mechavim just to have a reading? All right, it's an interesting discussion, but I want to take a look at the Aseret HaDibrot. The Aseret HaDibrot are very, very famous here. They're famous, not only because they're famous, but they're famous because they're not the same as the ones we read in Shmot. And what you have in front of you is the, even though it's normally the custom when doing this, to put the ones of Shmot on the right and Dvarim on the left, because first and second, I wanted to start with where we're at, which is Dvarim. So that's the one on the right. And then on the left is the version in Shmot. And all of the differences are marked, the green on the right side, red on the left side. And the differences fall really into several categories. So some are very, very fine differences, which may or may not be significant. They certainly are significant. It may not be significant for what we're talking about, which is an extra vav. So, for instance, if you take a look at in the first version, in the prohibition of Avodah Zarah, it says, Lo ta'selecha fesel v'chol tmuna. What does that mean? Lo ta'selecha fesel v'chol tmuna. How would you translate that? Do not make an image or a representation, right? How does it read in Dvarim? Lo ta'selecha fesel kol tuna, which is very different, because pesel vechol tuna means there's two different things being prohibited. Pesel kol tuna means pesel's modifying tuna, right? So even though it's a fine difference, it may actually be something significant. That same kind of fine difference shows up in in Dvarim, in the series of the second group, or the last group, which we typically show in an image with that of on the left hand side, which is lo tirtzach v'lo tinaf v'lo tignov, etc. And in Shemot we see lo tirtzach, lo tinaf, lo tignov, etc. So there's no vav there. So there's the presence of vavs that go back and forth. That's one kind of difference. The other kind of difference is that in Dvarim there was a phrase that's added, but it's only added twice. And its addition raises a lot of eyebrows. And you'll see it in green. Shamor yom ha-shabbat le-kacho, kasher tzivcha Adonai Elohecha. What does that mean? Keep Shabbat for its sanctity, to sanctify it. Kasher tzivcha, which means? As God commanded you. Well, as God commanded you, shouldn't that be referring to the whole thing? So, like, So either say that at the beginning or at the end, or say it in each one, but why pick out these two? And the second one is, now, if I didn't have that second one, I could, if I wanted to, lean on the Sforno, who has a beautiful chap on why it's Shamor Yom HaShabbat LeKadosho Kasher Tzivcha, because you might think that Shmirat Shabbat just means sit on your hands, don't do anything. And what's Kasher Tzivcha? So he says, based on the tradition that we first got the command of Shabbat at Marah, and there it says, meaning it's not just about sitting on your hands doing nothing, it's about spending the day, which is now free from work, for spiritual and intellectual endeavors to grow in Torah. So that's the Kasher Tzivcha. Kasher Tzivcha meaning not just in as God had commanded you, but in the manner that God commanded you. I could say that. The only problem is, then it says, for kibbutz avim, and I ran out of steam there. So I don't know what that's about. The third is additions. Is additions. So the first is vavs. The second is this kasher tzivcha. The third is additions that we have in the second, in the one in Beit Hanan. So for instance, in the command regarding Shabbat, we are told not only to let we should not work, our sons, our daughters, our slaves, and our slave girls, and all of our animals, but in Dvarim, it also adds Shorcha v'chamorecha. Right? Why? And you have the same thing in the very bottom. In the last Dibar, it says, Lo titaveh beit re'echa sadehu v'yavdo. Sadehu is not mentioned in Shemot. So we have these small additions. And of course, there's the most pronounced differences, which are absolute differences. The most famous one being Shamor v'zachor. In Shemot it's Zachor, in Dvarim it's Shamor. But what's far bigger than that is the entire reason for Shabbat given in Shemot is creation. And the entire reason for Shabbat given in Devarim is Yitziat Mitzrayim. So a beautiful Ramban on that explains how the two together create an understanding. It's not just God created the world, He continues to be in charge of the world, and our Shemirat Shabbat testifies to that fine. And by the way, that is a halakha, that Kiddush, you're chayev to mention Yitziat Mitzrayim and Briyat HaOlam, and that's why in Kiddush we say Zechel Maaseh Reshit and Zechel Yitziat Mitzrayim, right? We mentioned both. But question is, what are we to do with the Dibrot? So the thing that's clear from the fact that there's red and green on this page is that the Dibrot are not the same in Dvarim that they are in Shemot. Alright, so what are we to do with that information? Do we say, possibility one, that the Dibrot were really, and I'm going to use Shamor v'Zachor as the model, were really kind of multi-tracked? So at Har Sinai, God said Shamor and Zachor in one breath, like the Gemara says, Davar she'ena peya chola lehotzi ve'she'ena ozen yechola lishmoa, something no human being can perceive or express. Right, and based on the pasuk in Tehillim, and that because it can't be written that way, so in Shemot it writes one way, and Dvarim writes the other way. You can't say that. You can say that for Shamor v'Zachor. You can't say that for the vav. There is a vav or not a vav, right? And you can't say that for Kasher Tzivcha, which doesn't make any sense. You can say it for the whole Shabbat reason. You could say simultaneously, God was saying the reason is Yitzhak Yitzhak, the reason is Bereshit. But you can't say for these other things. It doesn't work. So as a programmatic answer that's going to be comprehensive and cover everything, you can't say that the two versions of the Aseret Dibrot were both said at Har Sinai and that Shemot represents one version and Dvarim represents the other version. The other thing that's tempting to say, which I think the average guy on the street would say this. When the average guy on the street and say, open up to the book of Exodus 19, what does it say? Okay, sorry, 20, Exodus 20, what does it say? It says the Ten Commandments. Okay, it's not Ten Commandments, but you leave that alone. Okay, open up to Deuteronomy 5, what do you find? Same thing. How come there's some differences? So what would the average guy on the street say?
Different writer?
What would the guy on the street say?
Moses' version.
He would say that it's the first tablets and the second tablets. Right? That's what everybody thinks. But you can't say that. Why can't you say that? Because look at the bottom of page 1. In source 3, when Hashem commands Moshe to carve out stones, he says, this is for the second Luchot, meaning, originally I carved them and I wrote them and I gave them to you. Now you're going to carve them. What's going to happen? I'm going to write. Right? So Hashem says, I'm going to write on the Luchot the words that were on the first, which means that the second and the first have the exact same words. So you can't come and answer and say, whoa, the one in Vaitchanan is the second Luchot. It's not true. And it would be very weird for the second Luchot, by the way, or any Luchot, to say Kasher Tzivcha Hashem Elokecha, because it's self-referential. It doesn't make any sense. After all, what are the Luchot themselves? What are they called? They're called Luchot Ha'idut also. Luchot Ha'idut, Luchot Abrit. Why are they Luchot Ha'idut? Because they are the classical souvenir. You were in Har Sinai, you heard God speak, and here's a physical representation of what you heard. You did not hear God say, Kasher Tzivcha Hashem Elokecha. Right? And you didn't either hear the Vav, or you did hear the Vav. It was either a Vav or not a Vav. That you can't do. There's a Zachor v'Shamor, maybe, but you can't. So you can't make that work. So what are we to make of this? Yeah, Jason.
One, going back to the previous thing, when you say that Hashem said the horn should work at the same time, that's not something that we could replicate, but we heard it. So how can you hear something that you can't?
I don't know. I'm saying that's one suggestion that's made.
Okay. And more important. But if you read these together as one unit, on one sense and on the other, know that they were 40 years apart
at 38
years.
All right, so I'd like to take both what Jason seemed to suggest and Mike seems to suggest and use that. And we've done this before. We've done it in the context of the changed orientation towards Mikdashim, whether there's supposed to be one Mikdash or multiple Mikdashim, and other sort of things about taking a look at what may have changed over the course of time such that what it says in Shemot isn't going to be the same as it says in Dvarim. Not because, and this is, by the way, a critical beginning of a response to some of the fundamental arguments posed by the critics, posed by the documentary hypothesis, is if you take a look in Dvarim, you will see, perhaps, a different orientation towards worship than you see in Vayikra. Yeah, but that's not because the Deuteronomists and the priestly code is written, etc. I'm not going to go into it, but rather because maybe things changed between Mamad Har Sinai and when Moshe is about to depart and have him go in. It's a whole new generation. So let's start by looking at that, and we're going to see some fundamental things. I copied way too much here at the beginning of the volume, but I did it for a reason. If you notice, I identified 10 of the differences. There's about 2 or 3 more, but I thought the number 10 was kind of cool, so I used that. So just to go over them, the general question is, why are these Dibrot different than the ones in Shemot? Which are the ones we originally heard, right? And how do we account for the Kasher Tzivcha, but only in Shabbat and Kibbutz Avim? All right, here you have Pesel Kol Tmuna, Pesel V'chol Tmuna, right? Shabbat and Shamor V'Zachor, and then there's Shor V'Chamor in Shabbat. And then there's this extra thing also that your slave and slave girl should rest like you in Dvarim, right? The whole different reason for Shabbat, right? And therefore, instead of Alkein Beirach, it's Alkein Tzivcha, right? It's a different difference. All right, the Manitav Lach is added in the context of honoring parents. And you want to look, and here I want to show you before we go into an answer, take a look at the last Dibar. And by the way, the last Dibar, it's a question, we did this a few years ago, is what are the Aseret HaDibrot? Meaning, what's Dibar number one? I know Lawrence Sanders likes to think he knows what it is. But what's Dibar number one?
I am the Lord your God.
Okay, what's Dibar number two? Maybe. But if you look at the text in front of you, you have a Masoretic text, which means you're seeing a Parsha. And the first parsha is Anochi em lo yelecha. In other words, I am God and you have no other gods before me is all one diber. Which is why many count that as one, lo tisa is two, Shabbat is three, kibbut avim is four, lo tirtzach is five, which by the way throws that whole midrashic, then some midrashic, it's pseudo midrashic thing that the first five are ben adol makom, second five ben adol chavro, etc. That's not accurate. Oh, because take a look at the take a look at it. Lo tachmod beit reyacha, and then lo tachmod. And both of the versions, lo tachmod, and its sister lo titaveh, are broken into two. Either way, you have 10 things, and I know you have 10 things because Moshe refers to aseret hadivarim. So really, there's 10 utterances. It's not 10 mitzvot, there's 10 utterances. But how do you divide them up? So, okay, fine. So we have that. However, you'll notice that in the last diber or last dibrot, however you want to look at it, take a look at it on the left-hand side in Shmot. Lo tachmod beit reyacha. Do not covet the house of your friend, your fellow. Lo tachmod eshet reyacha. Okay, your friend's wife. Ve'avdo v'amato v'sharo v'chamaro. So basically slaves and animals, anything else he owns. Okay, now look in Dvarim. First of all, vilot genevav, vilot achmod eshet reyacha. Where does it start with?
Wife.
The wife, instead of the house. Why? And then, vilotit aves, so switch the term, see about why, beit reyacha, so that's fine, sadehu, and then the sadeh is thrown in. The rest is all the same. So, there's two issues here, which is, besides the switch, the variant of titaveh, which is a synonym for tachmod, sort of, is eshet reyacha and beit reyacha being flipped, and the addition of sadehu. So what's going on? So it's critical to understand that Moshe Rabbeinu is talking to Bnei Yisrael. This is like, it's actually going to all tie quickly once we get this principle. Who's Moshe Rabbeinu talking to in Sefer Dvarim? It's one speech. It's a consolidated speech that's happening over the course of maybe a month, maybe 5 weeks, because Dvarim starts on Rosh Chodesh Shvat, what we call Shvat, and according to tradition, Moshe died on Zion Adar, so that's 5 weeks. All right? So it's all one speech. Who's the audience of the speech?
The millennials.
Right? Exactly. The new generation. This new generation was born in the desert or else raised in the desert. Maybe they're born in Mitzrayim, but they're very young when they left. Raised in the desert. Parents are all dead, which means the generation that was adults in Har Sinai are gone, with the exception of Yeshua, Kalev, Moshe himself, but he's not going to go across. It's a whole new generation. Now, a whole new generation is one piece of the puzzle, but that's not everything. Because say a whole new generation sounds like Bnei Israel left, they come into the Midbar, they're supposed to conquer, but God made a Gzerah, so they all died out, a new generation came in. That's not true. There's way more that happened. It's not just that it's a new generation. I mean, it's true, but it's totally insufficient. There's way more information, way more stuff that has happened. So let's think about what's happened. Bnei Israel left Mitzrayim. First of all, think about it. Who are they? Bnei Israel and Har Sinai, who are they? They're slaves. They're slaves. Grew up as slaves. They're fully Egyptian. They got Egyptian names. They got Egyptian identity. Right? Some of the most famous names that we know, like Aaron, Miriam, and Moshe, Pinchas. These are all Egyptian names. Okay, they have Egyptian identity. I'm not saying that they themselves Egyptian culture, but look, that's who they're that's the culture that they're coming from. That's why God has to warn them to avoid Mitzrayim and Kamas Eretz Yisrael Lo Tasu, because that's what they're familiar with, right? And so that's who they are. Parenthetically, and this is a critical thing for understanding the end. What is the key word in defining Egypt in the context of the narrative of Yetziat Mitzrayim? The key word is the word bayit. When God took us out of Mitzrayim, where did he take us from? Beit Avadim. Mm-hmm. Who is the big king in Mitzrayim? Paro. And what does Paro mean in Egyptian? Big house. Bayit Gadol. That's what Paro means. The whole thing of Egypt is a bayit. How do we get out of Mitzrayim? We bring the Korban Pesach into the bayit. And sell the Beit Avot. By the way, what's a bayit in that context?
Family.
It's not right. It's family. It's not just a physical building. It's a household. It's a household. Okay? Now, who are we talking to in Dvarim? Who's Moshe talking to in Dvarim? A generation that only knows about Mitzrayim from what they heard from their parents. They didn't experience personally. If they did, they were very little. So Mitzrayim is not a real thing for them. But there's something else that's going on that we forget about. Who else is this generation besides a generation that doesn't know Mitzrayim firsthand?
Well, they know God.
It's a generation that knows what firsthand? Victory, war, conquest, settlement, cities. We forget that perhaps the most monumental event of the 40th year was Sichon and Og, because it changed everything. Here's a group of people who are all about potential, and then suddenly it's about actualization. They've conquered land, they've beat the king, they've taken land, it's been distributed to them. Reuven here, Gad there, Hatzim and Asher there. You get particular cities, there's a battle plan in place, you're going to build cities to protect the wives and children, and you're going to have a rotation of guys on furlough who are going to protect, and the other guys are going to go in the vanguard. Everything has changed. And that's why I gave you this whole long piece, which essentially summarizes that. So now let's look back at the Aseret HaDibrot and see what's happening. But now, just one other quick introduction. In the piece that we talked about last year, that Aseret HaDibrot becomes sort of the fundamental starting point for the rest of the Ne'umah Mitzvot, the idea was that Moshe Rabbeinu is the teacher par excellence. He's taking the mitzvot that were given at Har Sinai, and he's giving them actualizations, applications that are appropriate for this generation. I think he's doing the same thing with Aseret HaDibrot, which is what you guys kind of hinted to. It was the same thing with Aseret HaDibrot. Let's take a look at it. First of all, we're coming from Egypt. In Egypt, iconography is rampant. The notion of symbols and images having inherent significance is rife. And therefore, what does Hashem say at Har Sinai? Lo ta'aseh l'chak pesel v'chol tuna. The pesel itself is a problem. We're coming to Canaan, where overwhelmingly the iconography, I believe, is that which is representative of things of nature, things around. And therefore, what shifts? Pesel kol tuna. That one little vav missing reflects the difference of a generation, the difference of two cultures. Pesel kol tuna. We'll get to the bigger ones. Okay? Now, we start with Shabbat at Har Sinai. Who are we at Har Sinai? We're a bunch of slaves that got out. Who are we now at the border about to cross in? We are slave owners. Who are our slaves? Some of the Midianite girls. Some of the other people that we've conquered. Suddenly, the worm has turned. We are slave owners. So now, Zachor, Shabbat Lekadsho, you got to remember on your own. Now what's Shamor? You got to keep an eye on what happens around you. What's the Kasher Tzivcha? So I'd like to suggest that the Kasher Tzivcha is not that God at some other point told you about Shabbat, but that God told you in the Torah, in Sefer Vayikra, about how concerned you have to be with the less fortunate. The Ger. Right? And then that expands in Dvarim, to the Atom, the Amanan, the Levi, but the Ger has special rights because he's disenfranchised. That's the Kasher Tzivcha. So Shamor means you got to keep an eye on what happens on Shabbat.
Is that separate
stranger?
Slave?
Stranger.
No,
just stranger.
Man.
Yeah, stranger.
All
but it then plays out to everybody who's disenfranchised. In other words, we start with that. The fact that you yourself know what it's like to be disenfranchised. Now, when you are in the position of being in the center, you've got to have special concern for those people who themselves are disenfranchised, and you've got to make sure that they... So therefore, the emphasis here becomes, L'man yinafesh amatcha, how do you call it? L'man yinafesh, which is added in, L'man yinuach abdecha amatcha kamocha, so that your slave should rest like you do. Okay? Which, of course, is a flip on Mitzrayim. But that's not something you could say to the generation just like Mitzrayim, because they don't have slaves. They themselves are just coming from slavery. And by the way, why the addition of shorcha v'chamorcha? Because suddenly this is a people who has Shor v'Chamor. Now, by the way, what animals did the people left Mitzrayim have? Tzon. Why did they have tzon? Because what's tzon for? Yeah. For eating. What's a Shor v'Chamor for?
Plowing
and working. Why would Bnei Yisrael have Shor v'Chamor? But now they have Shor v'Chamor. Why? They've conquered it from the enemies and they're about to inherit. They already have some land. So therefore, Shor v'Chamor become a piece of the puzzle, but it's a whole different piece. It's not just v'chol behem tocha in a general sense. You can't let your worker go take your cow and plow the field with your cow like cow and Shabbos. That's what Shamor is. Shamor is keeping a larger eye on what's going on the plantation. That it's not just what you yourself do, Zachor. It's a Shamor. And the Kasher Tzivcha is referring back to not Kasher Tzivcha about Shabbat, but Kasher Tzivcha about how you treat other people who are less fortunate. And that's why the reason for the Shabbat is all different. The reason for Shabbat now is, don't forget that Hashem took care of Mitzrayim. By the way, you don't have to tell that to the generation who just got out. They just got out. Don't forget that Hashem took you out of Mitzrayim. He took you out of Mitzrayim, and you were a slave, and therefore, you have to demonstrate a sensitivity to slaves. Not, now it's my turn to be on top, but lehefech. I understand how difficult it is, and therefore I have to demonstrate that kind of sensitivity. And you get to keep it out of aim. Let's think about this. Who are the parents of the generation that stood at Har Sinai? Huh? The parents of the generation of Tzidkar Sinai, who are they? They're heroes. They're heroes. I'm here at Har Sinai. My parents died in Mitzrayim. They somehow kept our national identity alive in spite of all the slavery. They died as slaves, and they somehow kept us going. So Kibbutz Avim's a little bit easy. A little easy to understand. Now, it's a generation that's standing at the border about to cross. Who are their parents?
Died.
People who died in the desert because they sinned.
Right.
Be a little easier to say, keep it up, maybe not so much. That's where the Kasher Tzivcha comes in. Here the Kasher Tzivcha is very different. Kasher Tzivcha means it's not just the instinctive feeling you have for your parents. It's also a command. And as it doesn't go back to you sitting and judging and saying, well, my parents really, you know, one of the most weird moments I had during Shiva, when I sat Shiva for my mom a couple years ago, was, I'm sure everybody here, as I know a lot of people here sat Shiva, you sometimes have those weird conversations, especially when somebody comes at an odd hour and it's just the two of you, and this is something really off the wall. So I had a guy come, and I asked him, because it was a Shana Mubarak, like how he dealt with, you know, when his parents died. He said, with the 11 months. You know, we all say Kaddish for 11 months. Why do we say Kaddish for 12 months? Because Rasha is judged for 12 months, the Mishnah and Sanhedrin, and we don't want to judge our parents to be Rasha, so we say Kaddish for 11 months. So we're very makpid. That mincha of the last day of the 11th month, that's it, Mari, no Kaddish. And I know people who have a yort site, they'll still take that day off, or they're still in the middle, they're overlapping, they'll still take that day off. The guy said, no, I actually said Kaddish for all 12 months. And I'm looking at this guy like he's off the wall. He says, no, because my parents weren't that religious. I said, how could you possibly think that about your parents? So bizarre. But you can understand that the generation standing at Navot Moav could look at their parents saying, you know, you guys were really condemning us to die in the desert. HaKadosh Baruch Hu turned it around on you. Zeh Kasher Tzivcha. But that leads us to the next piece. Well, one second. Yeah. That leads to the next piece. Is because what does it say in Kibbutz Avim in Shmot? L'man yarichun yamecha. She'll have a long life. Why will Kibbutz Avim give you a long life? Well, it's actually fairly obvious. If your kids see you honoring your parents, then what's going to happen? They'll honor you, and you'll have a long life. They'll take care of you. But you know what? They could take care of you, and it could be really rotten. So the Kasher Tzivcha ramps it up. It's not even just enough just to do the action. And therefore, what's added in? L'man yarichun yamecha or l'man yitav lach. If your kids see that you're honoring your parents, or even right now your parents' memory, even though they may have gone astray, not only are they going to ensure a long life for you, but that's good. My long life is going to be a good long life, right, of quality. One last thing, and I'll take your question. So at the very end, there's what to say about all the vav, but at the very end, in Shmot, what's lo tachmo beit re'acha mean? We're coming out of Egypt. So what's Beit Re'acha? Your friend's household. What does your friend's household include? Ishto, Yavdo, Shoro, right? His wife, his animals, his possessions, right? His wife, his slaves, his animals, and possessions. It's very simple. What does Bayit mean to the generation here? It means a house. They've already been told about houses they're going to come to. Batim Tovim Asher Lo Vanita. Suddenly a house, a bayit is a house, not just a family. So now, bayit is not general, it's specific. So now what's the first thing that a person covets? Ishto shel chaviro, man's wife. So therefore, it starts with Lo Tachmon Eshet Re'acha, because in Dvarim now, by it becomes a real house, because people are going to have real houses, not just flimsy little tents in the desert. So it says Lo Tachmon Eshet Re'acha, Lo Titaveh. It's an interesting thing because where does Lo Titaveh show up later on in Re'eh, when the Torah says, when you are distant, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu enlarges your border and gives you lots of land, and you lust after meat, you're allowed to eat that kind of meat. You don't have to bring a korban. The word tava comes in that context again. So it's with material growth. Lo titaveh beit re'acha. Beit re'acha here now means his actual house. Why is Sadehu thrown in here? Because this is a generation that actually has fields. This is a generation for whom these things are very real. It's not just in one day I'm going to get... I actually have fields right now. And you have fields. And you want my field. And so the difference that we see coursing through here is, if you look at who Bnei Yisrael are standing at the foot of Har Sinai, they are a very different people than their children 40 years later standing in Arvot Moav. Not just because they're a different generation, not just because their kids grew up outside of Mitzrayim, but also because of all the things that they've gone through and the way that they would relate both to a household, to parents, to slaves. Everything has changed dramatically. And as a result of that, the Aseret HaDibrot are presented this way. The Aseret HaDibrot, notice, are not emended, Chas V'Shalom. They're amended. Critical difference. Emended means we change the text. Moshe Rabbeinu is not changing the text. We have the Aseret HaDibrot and Shemot. We know what they are. What's Moshe Rabbeinu doing here? Amending. In other words, along with Zachor, there's still Shamor. Along with Pesel v'chol tmuna, there's also Pesel kol tmuna. Right? In other words, nothing has been taken away, but things have been sharpened and put into a better relief in order so that they become much more of a direct message towards the generation that's coming in. Yeah, Bill, you had a question.
Yeah, it's not secretarial.